In fact, he wrote two books on this subject. One was directed towards adults and the simplified version towards the children of Sunday school, titled A School Guide for Prayers and Attendance at Churches, which he wrote while dean of the Theological College, targeted the education of children and youth. In the introduction of that book, he explained to the students, saying, I've compiled this small booklet for the benefit of the school students and young youth who cannot use my larger book, The Spirit of Supplications in Worship and Prayers, to be a guide to them in individual and common prayer. I have placed at the end the responses that the congregation recite in the church during the liturgy in the Coptic language with the Arabic pronunciation for the benefit of those who do not know the Coptic, and also translated in Arabic. End of quote. As part of his educational reform, Habib Gerges also emphasized the teaching of Coptic language as part of worship as a means of maintaining Coptic identity. Liturgical books included a transliteration of the Coptic as well as a translation into Arabic to better serve the faith. The Coptic language had slowly withered away over many centuries, and at the time of Gerges, only a meager number of people had mastered the language, with an even smaller number of scholars. Reawakening the love for the Coptic language and teaching it at the clerical school, therefore, became part of the mission of the college. Gerges saw that as an important step toward reclaiming Coptic identity, saying, a long time had passed over the Coptic language while it was abandoned, subdued, and shut off from speech and circulation among the Coptic community. The first to show affection toward the Coptic language and rescued it, loosened its bind, and brought it to life was the clerical school, which revived it and breathed from its spirit into it and worked toward its promulgation among individuals, families, and among the entire community, end of quote. The first lecturer of the Coptic language was the scholar Ecladius Bek Labib, who went on to publish the most comprehensive Bahiric Coptic Arabic dictionary to date. Labib taught the language to his family and encouraged his students to engage in all aspects of it, including its grammar and literature. Thousands of villagers lived under dire circumstances and severe poverty in remote regions of Egypt, and particularly in the south of Egypt, where illiteracy was much higher than in major cities. However, Gerges did not neglect this important segment of the Christian population. There were no churches in the villages during those early years of Gerges' tenure as an educator and dean of the seminary. However, he encouraged the priests of the nearby cities to visit such remote villages and take the holy altar board, because obviously no churches, no consecrated altars. So we use this when there is no church and they have to set up a temporary altar. They use the holy altar board that is consecrated with the chrism, and to celebrate liturgies for the local villages. Obviously, the purpose of such celebrations was to familiarize the villagers with liturgical worship and to unite them with Christ through partaking of the sacrament in the Eucharist. So the liturgy became a vehicle of popular education for Gerges, since liturgy engaged all the five senses. Moreover, Burgess used several forms of popular education as part of his educational philosophy. For instance, he placed great importance on the use of religious pictures or icons. In a report on the activities of the High Central Committee of Sunday Schools and the Coptic Youth League, Burgess noted that in a period of 9 months from July 1948 till March of 1949, 3.25 million religious pictures were printed at the cost of 715 Egyptian pounds, which was quite an amount back then. Of these, 2.27 million pictures were actually distributed to the Sunday school children in Egypt, Sudan, and Ethiopia. This was a staggering amount considering that the number of Copts in Egypt at that time was around 1 million. Burgess initially imported many of these religious pictures from Europe. From his perspective, religious pictures or icons served as a great purpose. An icon tells a story and becomes a living example for a student to live by. This message was reinforced by Burgess through printing a relevant biblical verse for students to learn, along with a summary of the lesson inspired by the religious figure on the back of the picture. These were collected by children in a manner akin to trading cards, but rather than a picture of an athlete with his statistical highlights on the back, these cards had images of saints with summaries of their pious lives and scriptural passages on the back. Icons and religious art then become a window that brings in the light of education on piety and righteous living through the stories that they depict. Anton Brehm, in his book, The Educating Icon, argues that experience before understanding, participation before explanation is advocated as the way of catechesis in the church. End of quote. It is what a child sees, hears, and experiences in church that brings it into a relationship with the Almighty. As St. John remarked in the very first verse of his first epistle, that which was from the beginning, which we have heard, which we have seen with our eyes, which we have looked upon, and our hands have handled concerning the word of life. The goal is never to teach someone about Christianity, but to integrate them into an existing church through rites, symbols, and stories of the community. Learning hymns was also part of Burgess's educational vision to impart fundamental religious truths to the young. As a poet, Burgess authored several hymnals for Sunday school children, as well as for use in spiritual gatherings. Notably, he used many of the well-known ritual melodies that the faithful were accustomed to and composed hymns to fit those same tunes. And this was also another way of maintaining Coptic identity, because Western music had started to come in through the Western missionaries, and he didn't want to use that music, but wanted to maintain the Coptic melodies that were there in the liturgy, in the midnight praise, etc. Poetry and hymnology played an important role in the religious education curriculum of Burgess. He believed that he could teach central Orthodox teachings to children through the hymns that he wrote himself. The use of hymns was in line with Orthodox tradition that he strived to preserve. For example, we see in the hymnology of the Midnight Praise of the Coptic Orthodox Church rich teachings concerning the Incarnation and the Theotokos, Mother of God. The hymns defend the Orthodox teaching that St. Mary is the Mother of God, the Theotokos, a belief that Nestorius denied in the Third Ecumenical Council in Ephesus in 431, and for which he was excommunicated. So in the hymn books that Gerges wrote, we find a hymn, a variety of hymns on various teachings concerning the saints, the sacraments of the church, the Trinity, the incarnation of the Logos, virtues, the Ten Commandments, hymns particular to Saint Mary, the apostles, fasting, the creed, church history, and even a hymn on Sunday school, to just name a few examples. When Gerges became dean of the seminary in 1918, he conceived of Coptic hymnology as an ancient tradition of the fathers of the church and believed that the college can play a significant role in preserving that tradition. Hence, Gerges taught the cantors how to read and interpret musical notes so that they can learn the science of musicology. In that way, they could be able to master the Coptic hymns and be able to chant them according to firm musical principle. The liturgy indeed educates indirectly in many ways and is a rich source of knowledge. From the beginning of the liturgical service, the faithful are surrounded by a plethora of educational experiences that engage all of the senses. The readings during each liturgical service play a significant educational role. The faithful and even the illiterate hear the New Testament read to them throughout the year. Through these readings, they learn about the various significant seasons of the church and the life of Christ. For example, during Lent, the readings concentrate on repentance and its importance in a person's daily living. In Passion Week, extensive portions of the Old Testament are read, and many prophecies about Christ are heard by the faithful. Whereas in Eastertide, the readings concentrate on the triumphant Christ who is risen from the dead. Hence, the faithful can experience the life of Christ and the full church cycle through careful attention to the daily and weekly readings in the liturgy. The sermon also serves as pedagogy in the liturgy. Through the sermon, the preacher engages his listeners to the significance of the day through tying the readings together. If, for example, it is the feast day of a major saint, then his or her life story, as read in the Synaxarion, would be connected with the teachings of the gospel reading and the epistle. The sermon is also an excellent opportunity for the preacher to expound upon key theological teachings, as well as giving moral and practical guidance and instruction, and connecting this teaching with the local context of his listening. The Eucharistic prayers, along with the rituals, also remind the faithful of the story of salvation and take the believer on a journey from the birth of Christ till his death and resurrection. Many Christological and theological concepts are also heard in the Eucharist. For example, the priest prays near the end of the liturgy of St. Basil, saying, "The holy body and the precious true blood of Jesus Christ, the Son of our God. Amen." The faithful then know that this is not mere bread and wine, but the true body and true blood of Christ that was shed for their salvation. Due to this highly didactic nature of the liturgy, liturgical catechesis thus played a significant role in the teachings of Gerges. He was certainly aware of this and could observe how it naturally lends itself to popular education. Liturgical catechesis was therefore not only used as a form of popular education, but it was also a valuable resource for the theological education of students in the theological college, and even for those who were well educated within the Coptic community. So Gerges gave great attention to building a church on the campus grounds of the Theological College. and integrating subjects into the curriculum that would enhance the students' knowledge of the liturgy and its deep theological teachings. Goethe wanted his students to practice liturgical life as an important part of the formation process. Goethe perceived the building of a church as, quote, a very important matter, for without it, the school was merely an academic school, end of quote. For him, the building of a church at the clerical school was not an added luxury, but deeply ingrained at the very heart of what the clerical school stood for. The church building played a central role in the formation of theology students. That was also why Goethe insisted on having the cantor school as part of the clerical school for the study of hymnology. Liturgical life and prayer would therefore become the life of those students when ordained to the priesthood. Part of Goethe's educational vision was to involve his students in the life of the local community. Education was never meant to be a standalone venture, but was considered integral to the life of a community. That is why Goethe sent his students regularly to preach in the parishes and the churches, not only in Cairo, but also in many other provinces and dioceses. A document in the Patriarchal Archives revealed that students at the Coptic Theological College were sent to 57 areas to preach in January of 1938. Those included 7 districts in Cairo, 9 in the Diocese of Giza, 15 in Kalyubeya, 9 in Munufeya, 14 in Dakahleya, and 3 in El Sharqiya. Those locations increased 1 month later, and in another letter, Goethe mentioned 66 districts where students were preaching. And Goethe requested an amount of 26 Egyptian pounds each month to pay for transport expenses for those preachers. Each preacher was to give a weekly report of the title of the sermon, the main teaching presented, the district taught at, the numbers of males and females in attendance, and any observations. Understanding the sacraments and their theology was foremost on Goethe's mind, and in fact, he wrote an important book on that very subject titled The 7 Sacraments of the Church in 1934. Goethe also gave great importance and decorated the church with icons and connected his students with the saints of the church, that they might be empowered through their lives and in order to teach them the importance of the doctrine of intercession. When there were no funds for the painting of such icons, Goethe paid an amount of 46 Egyptian pounds for that purpose, which was personally owed to him, as discovered in the minutes of the Committee of the Patriarchate Administration. The church building would have thus been used to teach the students the rubrics of liturgical practice and hymnology, as well as a place for them to practice preaching in addition to their daily prayer life. The church building played a significant role in the spiritual formation of the students, as Goethe outlines here. It was inevitable, he says, that the school would have a church in order for the students to implement theory into practice and increase in their knowledge of performing the religious rites in the best possible form. When spiritual education played a very significant role at the clerical school, it was compulsory for the students to partake of Holy Communion every now and then, after they had confessed to the priest responsible. They used the church for morning and evening prayers and to meet every evening for Bible study, to sing spiritual songs and church hymns under the guidance and the supervision of the monitor of the boarding school. He was following a monitorial schooling system. and to present religious sermons on a daily basis. End of quote. Gutenberg has perceived the primary role of the theological college as producing educated priests and preachers of high caliber who would lead Christian moral lives and be exemplars to the Coptic community. They were to be well-versed in Orthodox theology and could lead, nurture, educate, and inspire the Coptic community and assist them in maintaining their identity. It was Goebbels who mandated and called upon the Holy Synod not to ordain anyone to the priesthood who would not first receive a proper theological education at the Coptic Theological College. That was an important vision to have, but was unachievable, unfortunately, at that time. And there were not sufficient vacant positions to cater for that many graduates. Goebbels emphasized the importance of education for those who were going to care for people's spiritual lives. Until recently, the Coptic Church did not heed that fundamental advice from Goebbels and continue to ordain men with no theological qualifications to the priesthood. As for adult education, Goebbels developed a series of four books of scripture lessons suited to the education of adults entitled The Invaluable Treasure, a summary of the Bible and biblical history, which he published in 1923. After his appointment as Dean of the Theological College. These books were targeted at families in particular, but were also suited to school use. They were to be used to encourage the reading and study of the Bible in each Coptic home. On the other hand, the government school system was only teaching the Islamic faith to students, and there were no classes for teaching the Christian faith to Coptic students in those schools. Goebbels thus played a role in supporting the plea to the Ministry of Education to introduce this subject into government schools. This was approved in 1908, and it was the four books mentioned here, written by Goebbels, that were used in these schools. Goebbels also created a special wing at the Coptic Theological College to train the teachers who would provide Christian religious studies in the government schools, since there were not a sufficient number of individuals qualified to fulfill this important role. How successful was Goebbels in this mission of reviving worship in the daily life of Coptic Christians through his reform efforts? Goebbels himself concluded that his work was successful, but at the same time, he qualified his comments, and he says this. Yes, the clerical school fulfilled its mission and continues to do so to the full extent throughout this period. It is the only lamp that shines in the gloomy darkness that is the predominance of ignorance. It annihilated much of the ignorance of the ignorant and of blind deviation as much as possible according to the means and motives at hand. If you desire more from it, that is the clerical school, then strengthen those means, increase such motives, and do not cut them off so that you do not quench the light of God with your own hand. End of quote. Goebbels was alluding to the much needed support from Copts, both clergy and laity, to rally around the vital educational reform philosophy that he headed, and to work as a unified body in order to achieve this mission. It is fitting to conclude with the words of one of Habib Goebbels' disciples, Murad Wahba, who sums up Goebbels' life like this. He says the great teacher has failed in his reform, but he failed where shortcoming and failure are considered an honor, It was the failure of a martyr. It was the failure of a martyr. The failure of a martyr is what Copts pride their history on. It is a great source of strength and courage. In all certainty, Habib Gerges has provided that courage and inspiration for generations to come to continue in his legacy. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Bishop Sorrell. I have a question to start off with. I'm going to be selfish and just ask quickly. In your research, have you found any connections between St. Habib Gerges and particularly the Catholic liturgical reforms of the liturgical movement of the first 3 or 4 decades of the 20th century, particularly in Europe? Because I'm struck by the parallels with popular education focusing on participation.
I don't know if there was much in communication with the Catholics, but I know that he was very well read and he would purchase books from Europe. So he was well aware of many of the famous educational philosophers of the time, like Friedrich Froebel, and he would quote him sometimes. I'm sure he was in communication with the Catholics that were in Egypt at that time, and with the evangelical and Protestant missionaries that were in Egypt. And even all of this, you know, the idea of Coptic Sunday schools, I'm sure that he took this idea from the Protestant missionaries and baptized it to become Orthodox.
Yes. Thank you very much. That would be great. I'll leave it to you to recognize people's passwords.
I have a couple of questions on the word sermon that you use from an evangelical perspective. Firstly, what kind of length are you talking about in terms of sermons? Because Protestants are used to half an hour plus, whereas a lot of traditional homilies are a lot shorter. And secondly, is there would there be a calendar of readings that sermons would follow religiously through the year? Just to clarify that for the evangelical point.
So, as you know, Orthodox liturgy is already very long. So it can go for 3 hours. So, although some of our priests also preach for a very long time on Sunday morning, which is not usually what I advise. So, usually the sermon may be 15 to 20 minutes.
Okay, so longer than a homily.
Yeah. And then there would be a lectionary that follows all the different seasons of the liturgical year, so the sermons would follow after those that lectionary. So it's a set lectionary for the whole year.
Great, so thank you very much for this fine presentation. Gerges is such a reformer and apparently so different from anyone else in this time. To what do you attribute that? In his upbringing, his formation, experiences, what do you think made him such a unique character?
I think all of what you said, Father, but in addition to this, what I think was out of necessity. He had seen, you know, the dire condition that the Coptic Church had reached, and even in 1897, he gave this very powerful lecture over 2 Sundays titled At the End of Masihiyya, or Christian Religion, where in the first half he begins speaking about the glories of the early church of Alexandria and the great fathers of the church at that time, Athanasius and Cyril, and the great monastic movement in Egypt, and how the church was leading in theology in many of the ecumenical councils, and reminding his audience of all of this. Then in the second half of the lecture, he begins talking to them about, come now, let's look at the dismal state that we have reached and why have we got to this stage. Let us all put our hands together and work at reviving and returning back the glories of the early church of Alexandria. So he saw the need, he saw that something needed to be done. And when he saw that there was initiative from the synod and from the patriarch to start giving attention to the education of children, He took it upon himself then to begin all of this reform movement. In 1942, near the end of his life, he wrote a very important book of how he could see the church reforming itself in a period of 10 years and all these different departments that could be set up. So he saw a great need, and he couldn't find anyone else to do it, and he brought many people along with him to begin this reform process.
Thank you, sir. I'd like to follow up with another question. Sometimes we revere saints, we don't actually follow them.
Yeah.
To what extent is Gerges vision
now
in the popular church today?
To be honest, when I started researching him, I knew nothing about him. And it was through little bits and pieces that Pope Shenouda the Third of Blessed Memory, I was hearing speaking about him, and he studied under him as well at the seminary as a lay person. But I think many in the Coptic Church didn't know much about him until my research, and thankfully that I published a book in both English and translated into Arabic, so more people in Egypt now know about him. But I still think that the Coptic Church has a lot more to learn and to delve deeper into the legacy that he left for us, and probably one of the most significant important things, his battle cry, was that no one should be ordained to the priesthood without having a theological qualification. I don't think they're quite yet, but they're on the way.
Just to note, Bishop Suriel, the Sankt Ignatius College Library has at least one copy of the book.
Two copies. I saw two this morning.
Yeah. Many more, okay.
No, thank you. Actually, I didn't know nothing about this great person. So how the church, the Coptic Church, is grateful to this man? Is she, I don't know, thinking of canonizing him?
Yeah, he was canonized in 2013 at the Synod meeting, along with Pope Cyril VI.
Hmm.
So they were both canonized on the same day as saints. So he's an inspiration for many people, since he wasn't a priest or a bishop. He was part of the clergy as an archdeacon. And so that was a very significant event for us and for me.
Are any of his hymns still sung in the Coptic Church?
Yeah, I've actually tried, because some of the hymns that he wrote, he also wrote a small booklet of how each hymn, which tune should be used to chant this hymn according to different seasons of the year. So I have a choir in Los Angeles that now starting to take that material and to reproduce all of the hymns that he wrote. So hopefully in the next couple of years we'll have the complete hymns that he wrote and published to be chanted.
Your Grace, where... is that at the Coptic Seminary in Los Angeles, then, that work is being centered? Or...
No, it's in the St. Mark's Church in Los Angeles.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, we'll hopefully there'll be more time. We did start you late, so we could give you another question, I think. Yes.
I would say differently. How? What would Saint Hubert say today? What he would say.
Well, I think if he was living now, with the amount of resources that we have and the technology that we have, what he could have done with all of that. With the limited resources we had back 120 years ago, and what he published and what he produced, and the amount of correspondence and letters to the patriarch and so on. Huge amount, just in the archives that I discovered by mere chance. I was told there was nothing there, go away, don't bother us. And then when I kept on probing, I found 7,130 pages of material, of correspondence, of his curricula, of the religious pictures that he was distributing. And he did that during his life. What he could have done today would have just boggled my mind with all the technology and how, you know, established so many branches of Sunday school throughout Egypt with the communication that we have now. We could have done so much more. Thank you.